He stretched his long body and then involuntarily shivered. The night had been a little cool, and the dampness seemed to have settled into him. He wrapped the blanket tighter around him. Francis Westbrook was not accustomed to camping out. What he was doing was about as close to camping as he was probably ever going to get, and he was not enjoying it. He drank some water and then edged his head out from his hiding place. The sun would be rising soon, he gauged. He hadn't slept particularly well. Hell, he hadn't really slept since Kevin had disappeared. One lousy phone call, that was all he had been given. He had met with London, like they had told him to, and filled him in on the tunnels, again like they had told him to. He had undertaken a little unfinished business along the way with Tuna, sure. Contrary to what Westbrook had told Webb, he could abide skimmers, and even those who used the product, because if you didn't, you wouldn't have anyone willing to come to work for you in the drug trade. It was as simple as that. But what he would never tolerate was a snitch. Macy had tipped him off to what Tuna was doing, and he had checked it out himself and found out Macy had been correct. So Tuna was, appropriately enough, fish food. Sometimes life was fair, he thought. Through the street grapevine, he had learned that Peebles had been killed. The boy just didn't have what it took. But Westbrook had also learned, albeit too late, that Peebles had been orchestrating a takeover of his crew and consolidation of other crews in the area. That one had caught him off guard. He hadn't thought that old Twan had that in him. Macy had simply disappeared. That disloyalty had really ticked him off. Westbrook shrugged. Served him right for putting any trust in a white boy. Now, whoever had killed Twan might be gunning for him. Westbrook would just have to lie low and rely only upon himself until things worked out. Relying only on himself. It was just like old times. He had a couple of pistols, a few mags of ammo, about $1,000 in his pocket. He had abandoned the navigator when he had come here, and the cops were still looking for him. Well, let them look. He had seen the feds patrolling the place, but he had spent enough time dodging the cops to know how to hide even his very large carcass so that he blended right in with where he was. He had seen some strange things going on here, and he had heard the sounds of dogs barking off in the distance. The dogs were bad news. He had hunkered down farther into his hiding place and pulled over him a blanket he had covered with branches and leaves until the sounds had receded. As best as he could figure, London was still close by, and if London thought this place was important, then Westbrook did too. He checked his gun and settled back, took another drink of water, listened to the crickets, and wondered what the new day would bring. Maybe it would bring Kevin. Ed O'Bannon paced around the small, bare space. He hadn't smoked in years, yet he had gone through almost a pack in the last 2 hours. Discovery was something that he had always contemplated, but as time went on and things went smoothly, his fears had receded, even as his bank account had swollen. He heard someone coming and turned to the door. It was locked, and thus he was surprised when he heard the knob turning. O'Bannon backed away. When the man came in, he breathed a sigh of relief.
Long time no see, Doc.
O'Bannon put out his hand and Nemo Strait shook it.
I wasn't sure you were going to make it, Nemo.
When have I ever let you down?
I've got to get going. The feds are bottling the country up.
Don't get yourself all bent out of shape. We got lots of ways for you to go and the planes, papers, and the people to get you there.
Strait held up a packet of documents.
Through Mexico to Rio, and then on to Johannesburg. From there, you got your option of Australia, New Zealand, lots of fugitives go there. Or maybe hit our old stomping grounds in Southeast Asia.
O'Bannon eyed the packet and breathed another sigh of relief. He smiled and lit another cigarette.
That seems like 100 years ago.
Hey, I'll never forget. You saved my ass after the Viet Cong screwed with my mind.
Deprogramming, not so difficult for someone who knows what he's doing.
Lucky for me you did, said Strait. He paused and grinned. And catching a little drug action on the side, that was a nice little side benefit for your practice. O'Bannon shrugged.
Everyone was doing that back then.
Hell yes they were, myself included, though it was just for my personal use.
I have to hand it to you. When you looked me up with your idea of bugging my offices and selling the information on the streets, that was pure genius.
Strait grinned. Well, the feds got all these resources. We had to level the playing field a little bit. But it was a win-win. You got the info. I got folks who need that stuff to conduct their business, myself included. You make money, I make money, and the feds get the short end of the stick. What could be better?
When Gwen had brought Strait in on her plan to exact revenge on the people involved with her son's death, he had started investigating both Hostage Rescue and Webb London. Growing up on a horse farm just made a person methodical like that, Strait had long ago realized. You got all the information you could, formed a plan, and executed that plan. Until he had been captured by the Viet Cong, Strait had been an excellent soldier, leading his company in and out of many hellish situations, and he had a chest full of medals to prove it. Not that that had ever mattered to him. Then he discovered that the Ed O'Bannon he had known in Vietnam was the same O'Bannon treating Webb London. That had given him the idea to both set up London and HRT because he knew firsthand what Ed O'Bannon could do with someone's mind. Initially, however, O'Bannon wanted no part of it. But when Strait had learned how many law enforcement people he had as patients, he had approached O'Bannon again and repeated his offer to bug the premises, sell the information to criminals, and split the proceeds 50-50 with the good doctor. With that inducement, O'Bannon had signed on immediately. The passage of years had not lessened the man's greed. Some of the bugged psychiatrist sessions had also provided Strait with all the information he needed to set up HRT. He had never told O'Bannon about his OxyContin drug trade, because the man no doubt would have wanted a cut of that, too. And now Strait already had a partner in Gwen Canfield. 25%, damn. But he had to admit, last night had been worth it. Nemo said, I was one surprised pup when you brought Claire Daniels to us. Although I guess I shouldn't have been. When you told me London was seeing her, I knew it'd be a problem down the road.
I tried to get him to stay with me, but like I said, I couldn't push too hard without raising suspicions. I kept most of his file from her, of course, and you were the only ones I could turn to.
You did the right thing. I can guarantee you this. She'll never testify against you in court.
O'Bannon shook his head.
It's hard to believe it's over.
Well, we had us one sweet operation going.
Had is right, O'Bannon said mournfully.
I guess you got no love for our federal government either.
After what I saw in Vietnam? No. And working for the Bureau in-house didn't do much to change that opinion.
Well, I'm betting you got you a nice little nest egg to last you the rest of your days.
O'Bannon nodded.
I've been smart about it. Now I just hope I get to enjoy it.
I want to thank you, Doc, for all your help. You did London perfect.
With his background, believe me, he was an easy case. Didn't even need any drugs.
He smiled.
The man trusted me. What does that say for the mighty FBI?
Strait yawned and rubbed at his eyes.
Late night? Asked O'Bannon.
You could say that, sort of burning the candle at both ends and in the middle, too.
There was a quiet knock at the door.
Strait said, come on in.
He looked at O'Bannon.
Here's your ride. This is my best guy. He'll take care of everything.
Clyde Macy walked in and stared first at O'Bannon and then at Strait.
I go way back with this boy. Showed him the error of his ways, I guess. Ain't that right?
Macy said, "The old man I never had."
Straight laughed. "You got that right. If you can believe it, this boy infiltrated a black drug crew in D.C. Set him up to take the heat for what we did. One of them, dude named Antoine Peebles, was trying to take over this fellow Westbrook's turf. So Mace played along with this little plan. Peebles helped us when we needed it, and then Mace killed Peebles."
O'Bannon looked puzzled.
"Why'd you do that?"
"Because I wanted to," said Macy, his remorseless eyes dead on O'Bannon. "It was a mission I put together for myself, and I successfully completed it."
Straight chuckled. "Then he made sure HRT and the Free Society shot it out. The man is invaluable."
"Okay, Mace, this is Ed O'Bannon, the friend I told you about."
He handed O'Bannon the documents and slapped him on the shoulder and shook his hand.
"I meant what I said, Doc. You did right by us. Thanks again. And you make yourself one fun-loving fugitive from justice."
Straight turned and left. As he closed the door behind him, he heard the first muffled shot, and then one more. Damn, that Macy was efficient. He'd taught the boy real well. He did have some faults, though. Macy's competition thing with the FBI was sometimes inconvenient. One of the concessions he had made to keep the boy happy had been pretty risky, but all in all, Straight could not have pulled this off without Clyde Macy. Straight had nothing against Ed O'Bannon, but loose ends were loose ends. And Nemo Straight didn't trust Ed O'Bannon or anyone else. Okay, one problem down. Now just two more to go. Kevin Westbrook and Claire Daniels. They had escaped once, but they wouldn't have a chance to do it again. And then it was time to call it a career. The Greek islands were sounding better and better. Not bad for a boy who had grown up dirt poor and who had lived by his wits ever since. America was the land of opportunity indeed. As he got in his truck, Nemo Straight wondered if there were any horse farms in Greece. He hoped not. In the carriage house, Webb opened his eyes and looked around. He didn't hear Romano stirring, and when he glanced at his watch, he knew why. It was not yet 6. He got up, opened the window, and inhaled an early morning breeze. He had slept unusually heavily. He would be gone from here soon, and part of him was glad about that, and part of him wasn't. What he was thinking about mostly, though, was Claire. His experience told him that there was very little chance that the woman was still alive. It was numbing, the thought of never seeing her again. As he continued to gaze outside, he saw Gwen driving down the road from the mansion in a jeep with its top off. She pulled into the cobblestone courtyard in front of the carriage house and got out. She was dressed to ride in jeans, boots, and a sweater. Her long hair gracefully framed her face. She wore no hat. As she walked to the door, he called out, "Rent checks in the mail. Call off the eviction." She looked up, smiled, and waved.
"I thought we might go for one last ride."
She looked at the lightening sky. "By the time we saddle up, it'll be the best time of the day to cruise the trails. You with me, Mr. London?" She flashed a smile that seemed to push away just about every concern Webb had. They saddled their mounts, Gwen on Baron and Webb on a smaller roan horse named Comet. Gwen explained that Boo had an infected leg.
"Hope the big fellow will be all right."
"Not to worry. Horses are very resilient," answered Gwen.
They covered a good deal of ground over about an hour and a half, and as they rode along, all Gwen could think was that she had never killed anyone before. Yes, she had bluffed Nemo Straight the night before, but when it came down to it, could she do it? She looked at Webb riding next to her and tried her best to cast him in the form of her worst enemy, her most terrifying nightmare. yet it was difficult to do. For years, she had dreamed about killing each and every member of this so-called heroic band of federal agents, whom everyone had assured her were the best there was. That they would get her son and all the other hostages out alive. That was what they had drilled into her, until Gwen's fears had receded and her expectations had soared. It was like being told you had cancer, but that it was absolutely curable, and you believed this until they closed your coffin and put you in the ground. Well, they had almost accomplished their goal of rescuing every hostage, allowing only her son to perish. And then she had watched, seething, as Webb London's face graced newspapers, magazines, TV shows, his heroic deeds outlined in nauseating detail, ending with a medal given to him personally by the president himself. She could not think of his horrible injuries. She did not know of the grueling ordeals he had endured as he fought his way back on to HRT. Not that any of that would have mattered to her. All she could think of was that Webb was alive and her son was dead. Some hero. Yes, the sight of her son lying dead next to Webb London had popped something in her brain. She could actually remember the crackle that seemed to go through every nerve in her body, like lightning had struck. And she had never been the same since. She had never had a day since when she did not see the bloody body of her son lying there on the ground. Nor could she ever forget the image of men in battle gear going in to rescue her son and somehow managing to bring everyone out alive except him. She looked back at Webb, and he slowly took on hues of black, of evil. He was the last man. Yes, she could kill him. And maybe her nightmare would finally be over.
I suppose you and Romana will be leaving today.
Looks that way. Gwen smiled and flicked at her hair. She kept a tight grip on her reins, for she felt her hand might start shaking.
Your good work done?
Something like that. How's Billy?
All right. He goes through moods like we all do.
You don't strike me as moody. You seem the type to roll with the punches.
You'd be surprised sometimes.
That was some party last night.
Billy can really throw them.
The Ransom brothers were not exactly what I expected. You don't believe that's their real name, do you?
Not for a second.
When I first met them, I thought they were gay. That is, until you walked into the room, and then their sexual orientation became pretty clear. Gwen laughed.
I'll take that as a compliment.
They rode past the opening to the small glen where Gwen's chapel was. Aren't you going to the chapel today?
Not today.
Gwen looked away from the opening in the trees. Today was not a day for prayer. While Webb wasn't looking, though, she crossed herself.
Forgive me, God, for what I am about to do.
Even as she silently mouthed the words, she never really expected that prayer to be answered. They reached a steep slope of earth that at the top was covered with trees. She had never taken Webb this way before. Perhaps in the back of her mind she had known this day would come. Gwen whipped up Baron and charged toward the slope, Webb and Comet right on their heels. They galloped up the slope, Webb almost nosing ahead of Gwen. When they got to the top, they stopped their mounts and gazed out over the countryside while the horses sucked in huge amounts of air. Gwen looked at Webb with genuine admiration.
I'm impressed.
Hey, I had a great teacher.
The watchtower is close by. The view's even better from there.
Webb didn't tell her he'd already been up there with Romano when they had checked out the ransom spread. Sounds good. They rode to the tower, tethered the horses to a wooden post, and let them graze. Gwen led Webb up to the top of the tower, and they watched the sun rising and the woods coming to life down below.
I guess it doesn't get much better than this, said Webb.
You'd think not, said Gwen. He leaned against the belly-high wall and looked at her.
Problems with you and Billy?
It's that obvious?
I've seen worse.
Have you? What if I told you that you have no damn idea what you're talking about?
She said with sudden anger. Webb's tone remained calm.
You know, we've never really done that. Talked.
She avoided his gaze.
Actually, I've talked to you more than I do to most people, and I barely know you.
Chit-chat, maybe. And I'm not that hard to get to know.
I'm not totally comfortable with you yet, Webb.
Well, we're running out of time. I don't think our worlds will come together again. But I guess that's a good thing.
I suppose, she said. I'm not sure Billy and I will be at East Winds much longer.
Webb looked surprised. I thought this was it for you two. Why go anywhere else? You may have your problems, but you're happy here, aren't you? This is the life you wanted, right?
She spoke slowly. There's a lot of factors that go into the equation of happiness. Some are more apparent than others.
I guess I can't help you there. I'm not an expert on happiness, Gwen.
She shot him a curious glance. Neither am I.
They stared at each other awkwardly for a long moment. Well, you deserve to be happy, Gwen.
Why?
She asked quickly. For some reason, she actually wanted to hear his reasoning. Because you've suffered so much, it's only fair. That is, if anything in this life is fair.
Have you suffered?
There was a harsh bite to her words, but she covered it quickly with a sympathetic expression. She wanted to hear that he had, but it couldn't come close to what she had endured. I've had my share of bad times. My childhood wasn't exactly the American dream, and my adulthood hasn't really made up for that.
I always wondered why people do what you do, the good guys.
She said this with a completely straight face. I do the things I do because they need doing, and most people can't or won't do them. I'd much prefer that my occupation became obsolete, but I just don't see that happening. He looked down. I never had a chance to tell you this, but I might not get another one. He drew in a long breath. What happened in Richmond, that was about my first time as an assaulter, the guys who go in and get the hostages. He paused again. After Waco, the FBI was really spooked and got ultra-conservative in those situations. I'm not saying that that was right or wrong, just that it was different. We wait around for the negotiators listening to all the lies on the phone. It seemed like it always took someone dying before they let us do what we do, and by then we were always playing catch-up. But those were the new rules and we had to play by them. He shook his head. I knew something was up when the freeze broke off negotiations. I could feel it. I'd been a sniper for a lot of years, and watching things unfold all that time, you get a sixth sense for what's coming. You just do. He looked at Gwen. I've never told you about this. Do you want to hear it?
Yes.
Gwen said this so fast, she had no time to even think about it. Billy knows some of it. When he came to see me in the hospital.
I'm sorry I never was able to.
I didn't expect you to. I was stunned to see Billy, actually. Webb seemed to take a few moments to compose his thoughts. While he did so, Gwen stared out at the foothills of the Blue Ridge in the distance. Now that she thought about it, she really didn't want to hear this, but she couldn't tell him no. Webb said, We got to the gymnasium entrance clean. I looked through the window. Your son saw me. We made eye contact. This clearly surprised her.
I didn't know that.
Well, I never told anyone before, not even Billy. The time never seemed right. What did he look like? She said slowly. Her pulse was pounding in her ears as she waited for his answer. He looked scared, Gwen, but he also looked stubborn, defiant. Not an easy thing when you're 10 years old and facing a bunch of psychos with guns. I guess now I see where David got that spirit. Go on, she said in a small voice. I motioned to him to keep calm. I gave him the thumbs up because I wanted him to stay cool. If he got spooked and reacted or something, they probably would have shot him instantly.
Did he?
Webb nodded. He was smart. He knew what I was trying to do. He was right with me, Gwen. With all that stuff going down, he was as brave as anyone could be. Gwen could see that there were tears in his eyes. She tried to say something, but found she couldn't speak. The terrible years of her life started to seem erased by his words. We were about to go in. Quiet, no explosive. We'd seen through the window where each of the freeze was positioned. We were just going to pop them all at once. We got our countdown, and then it happened.
What? What happened?
A sound from inside. It was like a damn bird or whistle or alarm or something. It was loud, high-pitched, and it couldn't have come at a worse time. The freeze were instantly on alert, and when we came through the door, they opened fire. I don't know why they shot David, but he was the first to go down. Gwen wasn't looking at Webb now. Her gaze seemed frozen on the hills.
A whistle?
I saw the shot hit him. Webb's voice was now very shaky. I saw his face, his eyes. Webb closed his, and the tears dribbled out from under the lids. They were still looking at me. Gwen's eyes were filled with tears now, too, yet she still wasn't looking at Webb.
What did he look like then?
He turned and stared at her. He looked betrayed, Webb said. He touched his damaged face. My face and the two bullet holes I have in my body. None of it hurt me more than the look on your son's face. He said again, betrayed. Gwen was trembling so badly now that she had to support herself against the railing as the tears poured from her. Still, she couldn't look at him. A whistle. Maybe that's why I disobeyed orders when I joined the attack on the freeze. He stared at her. It cost me my career, Gwen. I've been kicked out of the bureau for it. But I'd do it again. Maybe it was my way of atoning for things. See, your son deserved better than I could give him. I live with that every day. And I'm sorry that I let him and you down. I don't expect forgiveness, but I just wanted you to know. She said quietly,
"We probably should get back."
Gwen went down first and walked over to Comet instead of Baron. She lifted the horse's foreleg. Every nerve in Gwen's body was now on fire, her pulse still banging in her ears. She could barely stand, but she had to do this, despite all that had just been revealed. She had to do this. She had waited long enough. She closed her eyes and then reopened them. Is there a problem? Asked Webb. She couldn't look at the man.
It seemed like he was a bit off in front, but it looks all right. I'll have to keep an eye on it.
She reached up and patted Comet's neck, and while Webb wasn't looking, she slipped the object she held in her hand under the saddle.
Okay, now this is your big test, she said. We are going to gallop hard down that slope toward those trees, but then you have to rein in the horse quickly, because the path through the trees is too narrow to do much more than a walk. Understand?
I'm game. Webb patted Comet's neck.
I'm sure you are. Let's ride, she said with finality.
They both swung into the saddle and started toward the trees.
"You want to lead?" asked Webb as he settled into the saddle.
"You go ahead. I want to watch Comet's leg."
The horse bolted, and Webb wasn't ready for it. Comet accelerated and headed at full gallop down the slope and straight for the thick trees.
"Webb!"
screamed Gwen, and she rode after him, but she was subtly reining Baron in and was falling behind. As she watched, Webb lost a stirrup and then almost fell off. The reins dropped from his hands, and he clutched the saddle horn in desperation, even as the ground between him and trees was closing fast. He didn't know it, but every bounce in the saddle was driving the small tack Gwen had placed under the saddle further into the horse's body. Webb never looked back, but if he had, he would have seen a woman suddenly in terrible conflict. Gwen Canfield wanted so desperately to see horse and rider slam into those trees. She wanted to see Webb London die right in front of her, to be vanquished forever. She wanted to be released from the pain that had tormented her for so long. She just couldn't endure it anymore. She was beyond her limit. Something had to give. All she had to do was sit back. Instead, she whipped up Baron and thundered after Webb. 50 feet separated Webb from those trees, and Comet was living up to his name. At 40 feet, Gwen slipped a little to the side of her horse. At 30 feet, she started reaching out, poising her hand at just the right angle. They were 20 feet from the trees, and now Gwen had thrown her fate in with Webb's, for if she couldn't stop Comet, she and Baron would be hitting those trees too. At 10 feet, she managed to lean far enough over to grab the reins, and she pulled with a strength that came from all the agony bottled up inside her for all those years, for she almost single-handedly pulled down a 1,000-pound horse going at breakneck speed barely 5 feet from the tree line. Breathless, she looked over at Webb, who just sat there, slumped over. He finally glanced at her, but still said nothing. And yet Gwen felt like the load of the collective misery of the world had been lifted from her shoulders. She had long envisioned it as akin to barnacles against her soul, impossible to remove, and yet now it had disappeared like sand in a breeze. And she marveled that finally letting go of all the hate could actually feel this wonderful. Yet the cruelty of life had not finished with her, because now Gwen's hate had been replaced with something even more corrosive, guilt. Chapter 52. When Gwen dropped Webb off at the carriage house, she was strangely silent. He tried to thank her for saving his life, but she had cut him off and driven away. A very curious woman was Gwen Canfield. Maybe she blamed herself somehow for what had happened with Comet. Yet at least Webb had accomplished his goal of finally telling the woman what he had been holding in all these years. He thought about going up and telling Billy, too, but maybe it would be better coming from Gwen. That is, if she bothered to tell her husband at all. He went inside, and Romano was eating breakfast.
"You look a little whipped," commented Romano.
"Hard ride."
"So we are officially done here, aren't we?"
"See, Angie's back, and she is one ticked-off lady. I'm going to need to head home sometime and face the music."
"Yeah, I guess we're done here."
"Hey, Webb, I'll race you back to Quantico. We'll find out what your mock is really made of."
"Look, Paulie, the last thing I need is a speeding..."
He froze, and Romano looked at him curiously.
"What? It's not the end of the world getting stopped for speeding. You flash your creds and they let you go. Professional courtesy."
Webb pulled out his cell phone and punched in the numbers. He asked for Percy Bates, but he wasn't in.
"Where is he? This is Webb London."
Webb knew Bates's secretary, June, and she recognized his voice.
"I know it's you, Webb. I'm so sorry what happened."
"So Percy isn't around?"
The truth is, he took a couple days off. The media relations people are going nuts. They wanted to bring you in to get some quotes, but Peirce said no. Have you seen the TV or the papers?
No.
Well, someone would have thought we killed the Pope by mistake for the fuss people are making over what happened.
Well, a lot of people did die, June.
People with guns shooting at other people take that risk, Webb, she said, steadfastly towing the bureau line. Anyway, Peirce said he had to get away for a couple of days. I know he felt horrible about what happened with you.
I know, June, but maybe there's a silver lining in there for me.
I hope so. I really do. Now, can I help you with anything?
Clyde Macy. He worked as a foot soldier for one of the local drug crews. I saw some speeding tickets in his file. I just wanted to find out exactly where he had gotten them and when.
I'll have to call somebody for that, but it should take only a few minutes.
Webb gave her his number to call back. As promised, she did shortly. She gave him the information, and Webb thanked her and clicked off. He looked over at Romano with a dumbfounded expression.
What?
Asked Romano as he swallowed the last bite of his pastrami on rye breakfast.
Clyde Macy got 3 speeding tickets over a 6-month period. Almost lost his license.
Big whoop, so he drives too fast.
Guess where he got all 3?
Where?
All within 1 mile of the Southern Bell Farm, and one of them less than 100 yards from the entrance. The entrance was actually noted as a landmark on the Fauquier County police officer's report. That's why I picked up on it.
Okay, so I guess I'm not going home to Angie today.
Sure you are, but tonight we're hitting the Southern Bell.
They packed their gear and got in their cars.
You tell them we're heading out?
He motioned toward the mansion.
They know.
Webb glanced back at the stone house and said quietly,
Good luck, Gwen.
As they were driving out, they saw Nemo heading toward them in his truck. He slowed and stopped. He looked, Webb noted, very surprised to see him.
Hey, you boys want to have a beer? Nemo asked.
The vet's top was down, and Romano was seated up on the top of the seat back.
Give me a rain check on that.
Straight pointed at him and grinned.
You got it, Delta.
Thanks for your help, Nemo, said Webb.
I guess you guys are closing up shop.
Looks that way, but keep an eye out on the Canfields. Old Ernie is still at large.
That I will.
As Webb and Romano drove off, Nemo looked thoughtfully after them and then stared up ahead at the mansion. Apparently, the Hellcat had lost her nerve. Angie Romano was not in a good mood. She'd had her sons by herself all this time, and the trip to Bayou Country apparently had not been all that pleasant. Webb tried to give her a friendly hug when he came to pick up Romano, but stopped when she glared at him like she might break his arms if he tried. And so the toughest member of Hotel Team and the sole survivor of Charlie Team fled the Romano household late at night and climbed in the mock for what might well be their final gig together. Webb had not told Romano about him resigning from the bureau, but the word had gotten around, and Romano had found out when he got back home. He had been really upset at Webb for not telling him, but now he was more upset at the bureau.
You give them everything you got, and this is how they thank you. Man, it almost makes me want to go and work for a cartel in Colombia. At least you know where you stand with those guys.
Forget it, Paulie. Hell, if things work out right, I'll start my own protection company and you can come and work for me.
Yeah, and I'm wearing a bra under my Kevlar.
The men were prepared to go to war with their 45s and MP5s and body armor and even their .308 sniper rifles, because they weren't exactly sure what they would find at the Southern Bell.
They couldn't call the Bureau in because they had nothing to tell them except some speeding tickets and a few conspiracy theories. But the bright side to Webb's not being officially with the Bureau anymore was that sometimes an honest citizen could get into places and do things a cop never could. Webb had had second thoughts about taking Romano, but when he voiced those concerns with Romano, the man had told him that if he didn't go, neither would Webb, because Romano said he'd shoot Webb in a place no man would want to be shot. And Webb chose not to test Romano's resolve. Webb parked the Mach on a dirt road that ran along the property line between East Winds and the Southern Bell. As they were making their way through the dense forest, Romano was complaining.
"These damn Envy goggles are already giving me a headache. I hate the sons of bitches. They weigh a ton. And you can't even shoot anyone when you're wearing them. So what the hell good is that?"
"Then take the damn things off, Paulie, or stop complaining before you give me a headache."
However, Webb slid his off too and rubbed his neck. As forest sounds came at them from all directions, Romano said,
"No snipers to cover our butt. I'm feeling kind of nervous and lonely, Webb."
The man was just kidding, Webb knew. There was nothing on this earth that really scared Paul Romano, at least that Webb knew of. Well, except for Angie.
"You'll get over it."
"Hey, Webb, you still haven't told me what you expect to find tonight."
"Whatever it is, it'll be more than we know right now."
Without Bureau resources behind him, Webb had not been able to send the FBI's fact-digging machine into gear to discover what it could about Harvey and Giles' ransom. He could have called Ann Lyle, but he just didn't want to talk to the woman right now. With him out of HRT, it would have been too hard because she would no doubt break down, and then so would he. The two men made their way forward through the trees until they could make out the buildings they had seen from the watchtower. Webb signaled for Romano to hold up while Webb crept forward. Webb smiled when he reached the edge of the tree line. There was a lot of activity at the old Southern Bell tonight. A large truck was parked at one of the warehouse-style buildings, its ramp down. Men were carrying equipment out of the truck, and Webb's gaze went over each of them, looking for weaponry, yet he saw none. A large crate on a forklift was being driven to the warehouse. When the door slid open, Webb tried to make out what was going on inside, but he couldn't. All he could see were blinding lights before the door closed. Off to one side, Webb did see a horse trailer with a man working around it. From his angle, Webb couldn't see if there was actually a horse in it or not. He spoke into his walkie-talkie and called Romano up to his position. Romano joined him a minute later and squatted next to him. He surveyed what Webb had been looking at and whispered to him,
"So, what do you take?"
"Could be anything from drugs to a chop shop, I don't know."
At that moment, the door to the building opened and the forklift came back out. And that's when they heard the woman's scream. It rose higher and higher. Webb and Romano looked at each other.
"Or maybe a slavery ring," hissed Romano.
They put their MP5s on automatic fire and slid out from the woods. Each held the butt of his weapon against his right pec, the muzzle gripped with the index and forefinger. They made it to the side of the warehouse without being seen. Webb spotted a side door and pointed it out to Romano, who nodded. Webb made more hand signals, telling Romano with his fingers, in the special language of the assaulter, what he was planning. In a way, it was like the communication between a baseball pitcher and his catcher. However, the big difference was they would be facing something a lot more ominous than a Louisville slugger. Webb tried the door. Surprisingly, it was unlocked. He opened it a notch farther. Then they heard the woman scream again in a garbled manner, like someone was driving something right down her throat. Webb and Romano burst in, guns ready, took in the scene in seconds. From the corner of his eye, Webb could see Giles Ransom sitting in a chair. Webb bellowed out,
FBI, on the floor, fingers interlocked behind your head. Do it or you're fucking dead.
Romano would be proud, thought Webb. There were more screams from all corners as people hit the floor. Webb caught a glimpse of somebody flying by to his left, and he pointed his gun that way. Romano was charging straight ahead and then stopped.